Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 metre peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Human Rights Day is a public holiday here in South Africa. It used to be known as Sharpeville Day, a massacre that took place in March 1960, where the apartheid regime shot and killed unarmed black protesters indiscriminately. The day commemorates sacrifices made in the fight for democracy. Here, on the streets of Johannesburg, hundreds of people of all races participated in a walk to remember what it took for the country to get to this point. And this year was a special one, because it's exactly 30 years since the end of apartheid.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, you.
My name's Nomsa from BBC News.
Oh, hi, Nomsa.
Tell me why you are part of the march today.
It is Human Rights Day, and it's very easy to just have it as a day off, but I think the Constitution is really important, and so I came to do the walk to show that I think it's really important.
And with South Africa celebrating 30 years of democracy, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think a lot of us are feeling quite disillusioned at this stage. A lot of human rights have not been acknowledge there's been a lot of corruption, but yeah, we've got to use days like today to refocus ourselves.
Why are you here today?
There are plenty of reasons, but one that stands out right now, there's a lot of basic needs that are not met. So one of the biggest demand is access to water. Look at Melville right now. People do not have water, and it's been a long time. That is a violation of the same human rights that we are working for.
Hello, can I talk to you quickly? What does 30 years of democracy mean to you, ma?
Yeah, it's quite a sensitive one. As much as we would have hoped that our people would have achieved so much in the 30 years, we still have hope that all is not too bad. I think for me, today was I got to reflect on the good more than the bad. Yeah.
This song, which became synonymous with the Fees Must Fall University protests a few years ago, touches on the ever-rising cost of living, which continues to cripple the poor. It calls on the government to change the status quo. And it's now a regular feature at demonstrations all over the country. It sums up a lot about South Africa's 30 years of democracy, that this song would become so well known. People enjoy the right to demonstrate, and there are plenty of protests, but that also means there's plenty to protest about. So for this episode of the documentary from the BBC World Service, I want to find out what democracy means to people today and whether they feel that its promises have been kept. This is The People Shall Govern. I'm Nomsa Masego. South Africa's democracy began with the first multiracial elections in 1994. They were an extraordinary moment for the world, but especially for the previously disenfranchised black majority. It was tense a few days before the polls. The usual whiff of tear gas filled the air in the townships. There were fears that violence would disrupt the voting process. I remember seeing armored military vehicles patrolling, driving past our home several times a day and into the night, where gunshots rang out at a distance.
Today is a day like no other before it. Today marks the dawn of our freedom.
The morning of the vote was eerily quiet. My mother, who was 43 years old then, voted for the very first time. She told me that her vote was a get-out-of-jail card and that the important process would put an end to South Africa's brutal past. Others felt empowered too.
I never had a chance to vote before. So today I voted. I think it's a happy day for me.
I'm very grateful. I'm excited. I want to look forward for the new South Africa.
The polling station was opposite our house at a teacher's college. I saw several blue and white peace flags flying high and what I would later be told were political party agents dressed in their different colours, knocking door to door, urging people to vote. I felt differently that day. The heavy load on my shoulders was gone. Somehow, not having the urge to constantly look over my shoulder and hide whenever a tall white policeman on horseback passed by. I can't stand seeing a German Shepherd breed to this day. Those cops would set the dogs on us for no reason. I went back to the very same polling station 30 years on.
On the 27th of April in 1994, I came to this polling station with my mother. We started queuing from 6 a.m., filled with both hope and anxiety. I was too young to vote back then, but I saw what it meant for black people to be free, finally, to choose their own government. Thousands of black people lined up with their fists in the air, chanting, "Sikhululekile, we are free." And I understood that now. I was too.
Apartheid was finally banished. The 1994 election swept the once-banned African National Congress to power and Nelson Mandela to the presidency. The early years were highly promising. A progressive and celebrated constitution enshrined the rights of all citizens. Thabo Mbeki replaced Nelson Mandela as president in further democratic elections. Civil society flourished, as did a vocal and free press. 30 years later, the ANC is still in power. Key reminders of the country's liberation struggle are everywhere here in Orlando West Soweto, the famous township that became synonymous with the fight for freedom. So much so that a democratic tourism industry has developed here, like these street performers who were entertaining tourists last time I stopped by.
A young Nelson Mandela lived for some time on this street here. It's Vilakazi Street here in Soweto, as did Archbishop Desmond Tutu. This neighborhood is significant for South Africans. Many are grateful that it has become commercialized because they're able to put food on the table. There are tons of stalls lining the streets here. They're selling all kinds of different things, memorabilia, beads, clothing, bright colored shirts, dresses, skirts, even shoes are sold here on this street. There are also bars and well-known restaurants. Growing up in South Africa as a black person, the only time white people could be seen on the streets in townships were riot police and soldiers patrolling. Times are changed now. 30 years into democracy, it's different. Seeing a white person driving past, you know, in a township or even as a tourist, particularly in this neighborhood, is now normal. We don't get startled anymore when we see white people walking leisurely down the road because democracy has taught us about equality. It has taught us unity.
Sakhumzi Maqubela owns one of the busiest restaurants here on Vilakazi Street. Tourists who often come to Soweto by bus end up having meals at his place.
Tourism has benefited Vilakazi Street a lot. Even me, while I saw tourists up and down, I decided, no man, most of the time I'm doing nothing. Let me rather sell food. So I decided, let me open Sakhumzi. When the former president Nelson Mandela said unemployment is high, the crime is high, I decided, why not? Let me open a restaurant and make a difference in my community. so that I can curb crime. I can try and do something with unemployment that is high in Soweto.
And Sakuzi can't help but compare his own efforts over the last 30 years to those of the country's leaders.
So far in the last 30 years, it's been trial and error for our government. We can give them a credit that they've been learning. We need to change the mindset. As a leader, when you leave your position, you need to look back. Have I done a good job? For me, the day I die, I'll be proud to say, at Sakums, I've started 2001. Indirect jobs I've created in Vilakazi is more than 500. So when I go to sleep, I know who I am and I feel good that I've made a mark.
But those democratic dividends don't spread far beyond the area around Vilakazi Street. Just a 10-minute drive away is a very different Soweto to the one most tourists see.
I'm at a township in Cliptown, just outside of Soweto. I'm standing in the middle of disused rail tracks, and the grass is overgrown. There are a few tin shacks. It's an informal settlement. There are rows of portable toilets that are lined up here on the streets. This area is a sharp contrast to what Vilakazi Street in Soweto looks like.
Inequality was entrenched into our history by the apartheid regime. The promises of equal opportunities that many South Africans hoped would follow political freedom have still not materialized. Some are questioning if the honeymoon is over for the ANC, the movement that has long framed itself as the country's liberator. Young mothers are struggling to get by here. I met Tasneema Sylvester, sitting outside her home wearing a sun hat, black jeans and a worn-out red T-shirt.
How do you feel about celebrating 30 years of democracy?
I don't feel there's something to celebrate because I'm unemployed. No running water, no toilets. There's basically no services for us here. There's no jobs. President is telling you that there is jobs. They're just telling you when they do their budget speech or their province speech, this speech of what they ever are doing, when they tell you that there is jobs and when there's no jobs.
What are the key problems here?
Key problems is electricity, toilets, water, clean water. We don't ask for houses. Only those three things, that's all. And if we can think, when Nelson Mandela was here, he's the one who started this ANC, and they don't even abide to their promises, what they were promising us by that time.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel angry as a citizen.
Are you going to be voting this year?
No, because I haven't seen any changes that the ANC has done. I usually vote, but this year I won't. Democracy means, it means nothing to me.
Tasneema's story reflects a much wider truth in South Africa today, that division is now often between the haves and the have-nots. The Walter Sisulu Square is the heart of Cliptown. It's a monument that was built to commemorate the Freedom Charter, which was adopted by thousands of activists of all races in 1955. The document represented the aspirations of all South Africans at the height of apartheid. Its opening clause states, "The people shall govern." But 70 years later, people here feel that their connection to the history of liberation is overlooked.
My name is Ntokozo Dube, born and bred at Cape Town. I'm a tourist guide for Soweto history and cultural guide.
We are now inside of this structure. It's a tower made from bricks, and right at the top is a huge cross, and you can see through this and you can see the sky. This is like an open-air museum which has the actual Freedom Charter itself. All the words are written around what looks like a round table. The one that stands out for me is "The people shall govern."
Yes, and these laws, all of them, they're unique, special in their own different ways. There are 10 of them in total.
But now, having a look at Cliptown as a township, the one thing that stands out in terms of development post-apartheid, you know, into democracy, is this open-air museum where we are now. However, 10 minutes away from here is Orlando West Vilakazi Street, the Nelson Mandela Museum, which is much more developed.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you speak of the community of Cape Town, my community, it's very sad what has been taking place. Looking at these centres there, how beautiful they are. But none of them has been implemented into the community where we are today. We are living as like we are pigs, you know. We've been neglected for too long. Emotionally, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of bitterness as well, you know, out of this freedom charter thing.
What does 30 years of democracy mean to you in this current situation?
To me, it's rain, you know, it's useless. I don't have a meaning of that. I've been born into this community. Today, I'm 29 years, still seeing the very same thing as I was a young man. Mentally wise, you know, it's sad. It's sad, being honest to you, you know. And they are calling Gauteng the city of gold. But where we are, what kind of a gold are we speaking about? You know, it's so sad, you know. Yeah.
And it just started raining here in Cape Town. And I am stuck inside the open air museum. Great.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Up there, you have to be quick to make decisions because it's not a natural environment for survival.
Five incredible women.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
I risked my life many times
to be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
I had to finish it, accomplish it.
Search for amazing sports stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Nomsa Masego with The People Shall Govern. 3 decades into democracy, this dynamic country is facing a new reckoning. There are completely different challenges to the historic first democratic polls of 3 decades ago. Unemployment, crumbling public health care, and rampant corruption plague the country. I've been speaking about this with Tessa Dooms, an author and political analyst.
I think South Africa at 30, and our democracy at 30, presents an opportunity for us to not only reflect back, I think, on the last 30 years, but on whether or not the last 30 years are very different from the 30 years before that. It's an opportunity for us to ask, have we really broken away from our colonial and apartheid past? And for me, I think, given the sentiments in the country that we've seen, it's very much clear that people don't feel like we've fundamentally changed the architecture of our country. There are some glaring things that you can see about the country that are still very similar. High levels of inequality persist and have even increased in the democratic era.
So one of the best examples of the service delivery crisis that extends in all directions is that hundreds of trained medical doctors have been staging protests in major cities across the country because they can't find work. They're demanding permanent jobs, both because they need to live and they want to serve.
Dr. Tess.
Hi.
Thank you so much for meeting up with me.
I met up with one of the young doctors who was born in 1993, the year before our democratic transition.
I'm Dr. Mumtaz Imran Thomas. People call me Dr. Taz. I'm a medical doctor by profession, but also a health activist and a teenage pregnancy prevention advocate.
Dr. Taz is the first graduate in her family. She's surviving on freelance work outside of the medical fraternity.
It's very disheartening because you grow up thinking, I'm going to be a doctor, I can serve my people. And then you're faced with the reality that says, yes, you're a doctor, but you can't serve your people.
There have been numerous protests by unemployed doctors
What is the feeling around this issue with your other unemployed colleagues?
I feel like everyone started with hope. If we make enough noise, people will listen. Now the hope has been eliminated. Now we have unemployed doctors sitting at home, disgruntled, feeling unappreciated, and that's pretty much the air that everyone finds themselves in, because it's April now. And since January, people have been applying for jobs, protesting, but yet we still have hundreds of unemployed doctors.
What does 30 years of democracy mean to you in this current situation?
I love that question. So 30 years of democracy for me has afforded me the opportunity to be a colored female medical doctor and the first generation medical doctor in my family. However, on the flip side, it's also highlighted a very sad reality in South Africa. The people of South Africa are in dire need of healthcare. Yet we have a collapsing healthcare system, and that's why we have 800 unemployed doctors. So 30 years of democracy in South Africa, what that means for me is being robbed of opportunity and hope that was once promised to us.
Political violence in the years right before the 1994 vote almost derailed our transition to democracy. Deadly fighting that characterized the end of white minority rule erupted in townships outside of Johannesburg and in other parts of the country. Supporters of the Inkatha Freedom Party, egged on by white extremists, unleashed horrific violence to disrupt negotiations for a peaceful end to apartheid. Supporters of the ANC retaliated, and thousands lost their lives. The two sides clashed because the IFP chose to cooperate with the racist regime in exchange for infrastructure development and other benefits like service delivery and education for the Zulu nation, while the ANC engaged in the armed struggle.
I'm now standing in front of a granite memorial which bears the names of 688 victims of the violence that took place here. 30 years after the guns have been silenced and the killing stopped, families of those who perished in the conflict visit the monument to remember their loved ones. And many of the people here carry those scars.
And some of the people who visit this monument in Thokoza Township are those who fought in the 1990s. I met men who risked their lives for the ANC during South Africa's fractured transition over 30 years ago. Dumsani Khumalo is one of them. He showed me some of the old battlegrounds.
So this is Khumalo Street, and it was no man's land back then.
Basically, yeah, there was nothing. Quiet. You could hardly see a bed or anything, or a dog or anything.
What would happen if someone attempted
Definitely,
to cross the road here?
You were risking being shot by the snipers from the hostel, or risking being shot by our people from here, because we don't know who you are. Once you cross here, you are just, like we say, in no man's land. Either this group or that group can kill you. Either of them can kill you.
But you were young back then. What was going through your mind at that time? I mean, you're in the middle of a war, essentially.
In the beginning of it was fear, of course.
Mm.
Everyone was afraid. We were afraid of dying. First it was confusion, then fear and the desperation to survive. That's what pushed people to even take up their arms and fight.
In a quiet spot, we sat and chatted about his reflections 30 years on.
Would you say it was worth it? Being part of it? Being one of the commanders?
It was worth it. Would we have got this far with democracy if we didn't stand up and fight? Definitely not. Because the apartheid government was rigid. They had all the means, the money, the machinery, and everything. So they wouldn't have let it go easy like that.
Mm. Would you say this is the freedom you fought for?
I would say yes, it's the freedom that we fought for.
Mm.
Maybe it's because I'm coming from the older generation. Because now you can't just go out simply because a white person, you can spit on me and clap me as you wish or insult me or do whatever you wish. That's a big score, which at that time was difficult. But in terms of the governance itself, we had made a lot of mistakes. Like I'm saying, every day we hear things about the looting of funds, the corruption, other people enriching themselves, forgetting about the masses. If we could just handle that, I think we'll have a democracy that one was fighting for. But every democracy or every nation grows from somewhere. We are still growing. We are still a very young democracy. 30 years, if you look at it, 30 years is not a very long time. Mm-hmm. The apartheid government was in power for 48 years. Mm-hmm. We've moved. We've got a lot of gains. Like the government is trying to bring services to the people. We're trying to move.
With upcoming elections on the 29th of May, South Africa is counting gains of the last 30 years, with many asking what the next three decades hold for the Rainbow Nation. But many are also thinking about whether they want to participate in democracy at all. Here's Tessa Dooms again.
If you are raising now a family at the age of 30, all you've known is a democracy. But you probably are sitting in a situation where you don't have adequate access to services, where you don't have a job, or you don't have many prospects in your life. But when those young people see it, like a young man in Malazi said to us 2 years ago that really stayed with me, he said, we're not voting because we get a vote, but they get a democracy. Somebody else is getting a democracy, and young people feel like they've been sold a dud. And so we're getting to a point where many young people are disillusioned, not with one or two political parties, not with voting, but with the democratic project. And I think that's the greatest indictment on our first 30 years.
But while turnout at the last election was the lowest since 1994, many South Africans still believe in the power of the ballot box. Remember Dr. Taz, who said she was at risk of losing hope? She told me that for her, there's one thing that can restore it.
Will you be voting?
Of course.
Why?
Like I said, I feel that we've been robbed of hope, but voting is the one thing that can recreate a sense of hope amongst us as South Africans. Voting was the one thing that instilled hope into South Africa, and it can still be that one thing that instills hope back into South Africa.
Thirty years on from the day that gave me hope when black South Africans voted for the first time, I've been thinking a lot about that opening clause of the Freedom Charter, the demand that the people shall govern. It's the heart of what a democracy is. But democracy doesn't deliver on its own. Nelson Mandela once asked the question, what is it that we can and must do to ensure that democracy, peace and prosperity reign everywhere? It's a question that's as important for South Africa today as it was then. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Documentary. I'm Nomsa Masego. The producer was Rob Wilson.
The mountains are what keeps me motivated in life.
It's where we get to ask ourselves who we are and who we want to become.
At the turn of this century, five mountaineers set out on individual missions to become the first woman to scale all 14 of the world's 8,000ers. 14 mountains, all above 8,000 meters.
It was about pitting themselves against nature rather than each other.
They knew only one of them would succeed. But whether they liked it or not, it would come to be seen as a race.
Five women vying against each other.
The media needed to find some competition.
and they find it.
A race with deadly consequences.
We are just not designed to live in these environments.
Getting down alive was my only goal in that situation.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.